This is session four of our study in the Beatitudes. I entitled it, True Hunger Games. I don't know if you all are aware or not, but there's a series of books out and a movie's been made about the first one entitled The Hunger Games. And I have not read any of them. I didn't see the movie. I've heard about it. I've saw previews, and it has to do with a time in the future where there are games and people play them, and they play them to the death in order to get to food supplies and this kind of stuff. And we know that physical hunger is something that really can be devastating. A lot more people seem to be hungry these days. A lot of school children spend their days in school hungry. Folks are going with fewer and fewer meals. In fact, we know that some of the children who come here on Wednesday nights, the Wednesday night meal that they get may be the best meal they have of the day, whether it's pizza or spaghetti or something else. We also know that none of those could be in the movie Twilight. If y'all know anything about that, that's a vampire series. Because there's so much garlic in this room, they die. You can smell it before you... I tell folks, I like a little bit of garlic, but you can smell the garlic before you even open that door out there. I got to be at least part of one of those children of the night, but, you know, vampire or werewolf or something like that, because it sure gets to me. I think probably werewolf. I mean, this has nothing to do with it, but I do grow hair on my ears, and sometimes I shave it off, and sometimes I wait a while, and Sydney will... She'll say, "Granddad, you got hair on your ears." See, yes, I haven't told her yet. That means I'm kin to the big bad wolf, I guess. But tonight, Hunger Games. Hunger is not a game. But tonight's beatitude is, blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, for they shall be filled, or they shall be satisfied. Well, as we've been doing, look at the first part of this beatitude. If you go to today's English version, which is the Good News Bible, which was written predominantly for folks for whom English was not the first language, if you go to that translation, the today's English version, it's translated, "Happy are those whose greatest desire is to do what God requires." That's the first part of it, which is really kind of getting at the whole understanding of what it means to hunger and thirst for righteousness, or hunger and thirst after righteousness. The Greek here can mean for or after, either one. And sometimes we think, okay, when we hunger and thirst for righteousness, we're wanting to sit back and just kind of let it come to us. Whereas if you think of it, hunger and thirst after righteousness, that means we're going after something, we're pursuing something, trying to make it our own, trying to attain it. Matthew, by the way, places a great deal of emphasis in the gospel, recording things, emphasis on personal righteousness, personally being righteous or in proper relationship. For example, later in chapter 5, in verse 20, Jesus says, "I tell you, unless your righteousness," that is personally, "unless your righteousness exceeds that of the scribes and Pharisees, you'll never enter the kingdom of heaven." So personal righteousness is extremely important. In chapter 7, familiar passage, starting in verse 21, "Not everyone who says to me, 'Lord, Lord,' will enter the kingdom of heaven, but only the one who does the will of my Father in heaven. On that day many will say to me, 'Lord, Lord, did we not prophesy in your name, and cast out demons in your name, and do many deeds of power in your name?' Then I will declare to them, 'I never knew you. Go away from me, you evil doers.'" And it may not be because they necessarily did something terribly evil, but if you move over into verse 24, "Everyone then who hears these words of mine and acts on them will be like a wise man who built his house on the rocks." Not acting upon those, not going after righteousness, not living in righteousness, can be considered, and in the last days, Jesus says here, just may be considered, you know, if you avoid it and say, "Well, you know, I walked the aisle and I got dunk poured or sprinkled and everything's okay," but you don't pursue a lifestyle of righteousness, that may be considered doing evil. Doing evil by omitting doing what is right and being righteous in one's life. So that's kind of where we're headed in here. I've already mentioned the book and movie phenomenon, The Hunger Games. A lot of folks are reading those. It's a trilogy. I haven't picked them up and read them. I may at some point in time. Real hunger and real thirst are not games. Don't like to hear that sound. Those fire trucks. Real hunger and real thirst are not truly games. In Jesus' day in Palestine, the typical day worker made very little. And I guess, of course, if I was raised in that, I guess I'd be okay. But if I had to go back and live that way now, it'd be kind of tough because I am an omnivore. You know, I'll eat vegetables and meat, but I'm much more of a carnivore than I am an herbivore. I like eating meat. But back then, the typical person ate meat at best once a week. Most of the time it was fruits and vegetables. But at best once a week, and some of them, if they were on the lower end of the pay scale, they may not eat meat but once every 3 or 4 weeks because they couldn't afford to do it. It was a great expense when Passover came around and they had to get a lamb to sacrifice. And that's sometimes families would go in together to do that and pool their money to do that because they couldn't afford it. Cool water was not readily available to a lot of folks. If you went to a deep well, if there was the luxury of a deep well somewhere in the town in which you lived, there were certain times of the day that the women would go and draw the water. Men typically didn't. And that water might be cool, but depending on the heat of the day and where you live, by the time you got back, it might be tepid. The streams were not necessarily cool. Up in the mountains where they began, more so, but by the time you got down into the valleys and even got closer to toward the area of the Dead Sea, with all the arid land around there, the water was not very cool. So, you know, it's not like I've got a water bottle sitting out in the car that I filled with ice and a little bit of water, and when I leave tonight, it'll still be cool. But that wasn't so. People lived life on the edge when it came to food and drink, and I mean the edge of starvation, as I say here. So Jesus is talking to these people, and they understand what it is to be hungry. They understand what it is to be thirsty. And they understand the strong desire when one is truly hungry. And as I say here, thirst might be an even stronger term given the arid region. If you had good cisterns or a good well, you were extremely fortunate. We don't even think we turn on the tap and the water's there. Some of the third world countries I mentioned this morning, not only the group that's going to Guatemala from the church in Simpsonville, but Pelham Road Baptist Church going to the Dominican Republic. They're taking plenty of bottled water with them, and they're only going to buy a bottle of water there because they're not about to. You know, some of these places you don't want to drink the water. But here we've got this whole context of hunger and thirst, a deep hunger, something that can only be filled or satisfied with the proper food. You know, there are times when you're hungry and you eat something and it just doesn't stay down. It's not the right stuff you need, right? And there are foods that we eat, I mean, they're so nutritious. Twinkies and brownies. And of course, you know, brownies, you got eggs and flour, you know, that's right. Milk. Yeah, dark chocolate. Dark chocolate's a little bitter. But, those kinds of things. But to really be hungry for the right kinds of food, and that's what Jesus is talking about here, that righteousness is not just hunger for anything, but recognizing only the proper things foods, or in this case, spiritual connection with God, can provide true life. The word here for righteousness, dikaiosune, it comes out as a Y in English, but it's actually an upsilon, a U. Dikaiosune is the desired object of hunger and thirst. Some people think that this term means to desire vindication. After all, some people associated the righteousness of God with punishment on their enemies, with vindicating them for being faithful to God. And so there were people in Jesus' audience, and actually there are some Jewish scholars who study the New Testament, and I know of, and she's actually a very good scholar, but at Vanderbilt, Amy Jill Levine is a New Testament scholar. Her PhD is in New Testament studies, and she's Jewish. But there are Jewish scholars out there who see this predominantly in the context of Jesus is talking to people who are under Roman domination, and that most of the people out there would have heard righteousness as God's righteous indignation, God's righteous vindication of the people, and the destruction of Rome. So, in some senses, that selfish desire for righteousness in the case of vindication, in the case of judgment on your enemies, is a part of what the audience may be hearing, but I disagree personally with the scholars who think that that's the underpinning of what Jesus is saying here, especially when you take the fact that Jesus didn't seek vindication against those who killed him. Jesus didn't seek to destroy those who were opposing him. He tried to show them grace. He tried to show them love. He tried to talk with them about relationships with God and with each other that would bring life, not death. Life, not destruction. But you ought to know by now that I'm going to tell you all the different possibilities that I can. Just so you kind of get an idea of where different people come from. And there may have been some in the crowd who saw it that way. Especially if the Roman soldiers had done something to their own families. Other people understand this to mean this righteousness, this dikaiosune, understand this to mean a person who strives to live upright. That is, to live a good life, to have good conduct. Which gives a question and a challenge. How much do you want goodness? How much do you really want goodness? Do you desire goodness? And that doesn't just mean I desire to win the lottery. Do you desire goodness, goodness of life by others, but also goodness of life for yourself toward others, as badly as you desire food when you're starving? Do you really want goodness as much as a starving man wants food? William Barclay raises this in his commentary on Matthew. How intense is our desire for goodness? Is it so intense that we will not rest until we find satisfaction in being good for the sake of God and others? That takes a lot of work. And as I said the other week, a lot of the reason that people would much rather look at the Ten Commandments, don't do these things, than look at the Beatitudes as a guideline for living is it takes work. You have to do something here, and it's not always comfortable to do these things. Some interpret this also as people who realize they cannot depend upon their own power. Only God can actually bring righteousness. But in so doing, they don't say, okay, I'm going to sit back and let God do it all. They open themselves up to the possibilities of God doing for them. They hear with open ears. They hunger and thirst for total, complete goodness. Actually, the Greek usage here, when it talks about hungering and thirsting for righteousness, is in the accusative case. And in the Greek text, that means that you don't settle for part, but you're looking for the whole. So it's not I want or will do this toward righteousness, but I won't do that. So I'll do part of it, but not all of it. What it means here is those who hunger and thirst for the whole food metaphor here. One came to my mind was we want the whole enchilada. The whole enchilada. We want everything. And we're willing to hunger for the whole of goodness. That is W-H-O-L-E. All of, or the whole of goodness, which in itself, if we attain that, or even come close, brings us closer to wholeness ourselves. Sometimes the only way we can become more whole is to seek more wholeness in goodness, even towards those that we don't necessarily agree with, those we don't necessarily like. And that's the hard part of desiring, this hungering and thirsting for righteousness. The sense of goodness that is dependent upon God, but goodness that is total. Total goodness in connection with God. Both for ourselves inside and for the larger world around us. You know, it's not enough for us, and Jesus does not call, as this personal righteousness goes in other places, Jesus doesn't call on people to become good and holier than thou and then sit back and be satisfied with it. It's not enough to do that. The full satisfaction comes in then doing something with it. We said before, and I know some of y'all have shared in other times and other places, the satisfaction that doing something for someone because it was the right thing to do and they were in need, while it might have blessed them, when you understood what it truly meant to them, you were the one that was really more blessed. While you helped bring some sense of wholeness to them, the wholeness also came back to you. And so helping the world become more whole is also a way to help ourselves become more whole. And wholeness through right conduct, right relationship. George Arthur Buttrick, who was the editor for the original Interpreter's Bible commentary series, writes, and I quote here on the handout, "Righteousness also means equity and humanity." It doesn't just mean equality for me and nobody else, but equity for all and all of humanity. And it means being humane. That's what he says here. It means equity and humanity. That means being humane toward others. The realm of the Christ spirit, that is to have the same spirit as Christ. Jesus saw and sees people hungering, but not for righteousness. And especially not for His righteousness, which is justice held in love. End quote. That's kind of the tough part. We want righteousness, but sometimes we don't want justice as in fairness. In love. Or as Robert Louis Stevenson said, most people suffer from, quote, the malady of not wanting. End of quote. And when it comes to righteousness, said, you know, a lot of folks suffer from that sickness, that disease, the malady of really not wanting it. Which only makes us suffer. Even though we don't necessarily see that all the time, it makes us less capable than we truly could be if we wanted it, especially desiring goodness above all else. But who can attain this? I mean, can we ever truly attain perfect righteousness? No. And some people, I know of folks who, you know, who will say, I've had discussions with some folks before in years past who said, well, you know, I can't ever be completely righteous, so, you know, why should I try? I'll just let God save me in the end. Well, part of that salvation involves trying. It involves doing something with that righteousness. No, none of us can ever be righteous on our own. None of us can ever attain true, perfect righteousness. Although I had a student not long ago who I think thought he was just about there. also, we have to look at the context here. The metaphors that Jesus uses tend away from our being able to do God's will and our being able to will what God wills in and of ourselves. We must have, part of it's up to us, you and me, because we have to have a desire to really connect with God and follow what God desires. But that's as far as we can take it. We can't do it by ourselves. God has to be involved in the equation. So it's not, although God could, and strong Calvinists would say, absolutely, God does. And God does only for those of the elect. But other than that, it's really a partnership between each of us individually and God. And then that partnership is to spill over around us so that it's a partnership between God and me and William. And a partnership between God and me and William and Sarah. And that on we could go and spread it out. It's a partnership that we have with God to seek that righteousness, to be open to God's leading in that righteousness, to approach it. But it extends beyond us to others who around us who have the same will and the same desire to that righteousness, to work together. And that's how the hunger and the thirst for righteousness changes the world. Just a few folks at a time, but changes the world. And that's not what the world necessarily wants, is it? No. I mean, that's not what the world necessarily wants, because it takes a lot of work, and it also means that we don't have all the control. God has to be in the mix somewhere. And sometimes it means that we don't have all the control. God has to be in the mix, and somebody else has to be in the mix too. And we'd much rather oftentimes trust in ourselves than we would somebody else. But part of the hungering and thirsting for righteousness also means that we understand that there are other people out there who hunger and thirst for righteousness as well and the complete total goodness, and we should help them and let them help us. You know, I often, and it's not, okay, well, I'll meet you halfway. Yeah. Growing up, you say, well, I'll meet you halfway. And you make a deal with somebody, say, well, I'll tell you what, I don't want to do all of that, and you don't want to do all of this, but we'll meet halfway. In counseling with folks in premarital counseling, I'll ask a number of questions, but among them is, okay, so need to understand where y'all are. Do you understand? You know, what's it going to take for this marriage to really work? You know, I mean, are you ready to meet each other halfway? You probably, well, no, you might be able to guess. A whole lot more people say yes, they're ready to meet each other halfway, than the folks who say, well, I'm not in it halfway, I'm in it all the way. And that's the point that I make with couples is, if you think, well, I'm going to put in 50% and you put in 50%, guess what? You're going to be lucky to get 50% between the two of you a lot of the time. It has to be, I'm 100% committed to this and I'm going to give every bit that I can all the time. And if the other person gives every bit that they can all the time and that's how you approach it, then, yeah, there'll be some days when you don't get there, but it's going to be a whole lot more fruitful and productive and very probably last a whole lot longer. Why? Because you're giving, not expecting anything to receive, and if both are given all, then it's going to work. But if you say, well, I'm going to give half and you give half, what if somebody only gets 30% one day? You don't get nearly as close. And that's what he's talking about here too. That hunger and thirst for righteousness is, yes, a personal thing, but it's also a corporate thing. Between those who hunger and thirst for that personal goodness and righteousness with God, it also has a corporate, because we're not total entities unto ourselves. I don't know about y'all. I really don't want to be the only one there. I know some folks who think they're going to be the only ones there, or their particular group's going to be the only ones there, but if everybody was like me and thought like me, it'd sure be chaotic, and someday it'd make heaven an awful boring place, because everybody'd be telling the same puns and have all the same, and you know, nobody'd be able to get anything on anybody else, and you wouldn't laugh. It's like the old joke, and you can put whatever denomination in it, but since we're here and we're Baptists, that's the one that I use. Guy dies and goes to heaven, and told this before, guy dies, goes to heaven, and Peter starts showing him around. They're going down this road, and they come to this group of people having a really good time, and go over, and they're really good folks, having a good time, laughing, everything when they leave. Peter says, now those are the Episcopalians. They know how to have a real good time. So, but you know, really good people. Go down the road a little further, and they find another group. Says, those are the Catholics. They know how to have a good time. You're really good people. You need to get to know them. Go a little further. Find this group that's real kind of stoic and everything. And when they leave, but they're nice folks. When they leave, Peter says, now, those are the Lutherans. They don't get really excited about a whole lot, but, you know, they're really good folks. And go down a little further, and they find some Methodists. Finally come to the end of the road, and there's a door, huge door with a padlock on this side. A little bitty window. So you get close to the door, the guy says, Peter, he said, no, shh. Come here, look. Looks at people everywhere. So much food that the tables in heaven are creaking. Some of them gathered around the piano singing, others pitching horseshoes, others just sitting in rocking chairs. But Peter, shh. Whatever you do when you get near this door, don't make any noise. See, those are the Baptists. They think they're the only ones in here. Yeah. But, so you can substitute any denomination in there whatsoever. But, you know, our hungering and thirsting for righteousness isn't something that just looks out for me. That's what Jesus is talking about here. It's not something that just looks out for me. It's something that is a connection between God and me and others around. For the good of the whole, not just the individual. And when the whole becomes more whole, the individuals in the whole, W-H-O-L-E, the individuals in the wholeness become more whole. Stevenson also said, to travel hopefully is a better thing sometimes than to arrive. Well, you've often heard that a lot of times the satisfaction comes in the journey. And that's true to an extent. But I would contend that those who hunger and thirst after Jesus do both. And that's the last part of the Beatitude. They hunger and thirst after that relationship with Jesus to that point. They do both. They travel hopefully, and they also get to arrive in a good way. So, blessed are those who hunger and thirst after righteousness. Or as the New English Bible says, how blessed are those who hunger and thirst to see right prevail. For they shall be satisfied or filled, as the translation I read a while ago. But the word is to be filled or to be sated. Your hunger is sated. Your thirst is sated. It's satisfied. It's complete. It's deeper than simply physical satisfaction of food or drink. You know, we're not going to talk about which ones, but you know the old jokes about, you eat this kind of food and you're hungry again in an hour. You know, it just doesn't kind of stick with you. Eat this oatmeal. No, we don't have any sugar or cinnamon, but eat this oatmeal, not instant oatmeal. Eat this oatmeal that you stand a spoon in that stands up straight. It'll stick to your ribs. Now, what did that mean? That meant you weren't going to get hungry an hour later. In fact, you might not be hungry for several hours if you eat enough of it. After it swells up in your stomach, all that. But you were satisfied. That hunger was gone. It stayed away. So it's more than that. As Buttrick says, there are bread and water for the hunger of the mouth, and there is light for the hunger of the eyes. Why should it be hard for... Why should it be hard for us to believe there is fulfillment for thirst of the soul? That is a hunger and a thirst for truth. Righteousness. But God blesses the effort. The effort is honest and sincere. If the effort is honest and sincere and based on a true desire to have relationship with God in deeper ways, not just keep it on the surface, Far too many folks that just want to keep it on the surface and keep God at arm's length as much as they can. But if it is a true desire, an honest, sincere desire and effort to get close to God in righteousness, to seek that higher truth, then God will bring satisfaction. We will find points where maybe we didn't think we were getting there, and all of a sudden something happens or something is said or a thought crosses, and it's like no other feeling in the world. And we realize at that point we have connected with God and with God's creation in a deeper way than we ever have before. That's what Jesus is talking about here, is that kind of relationship, seeking that kind of relationship. To hunger after God, especially in Jesus, brings joy and true satisfaction. It's similar if you read Psalm 17:15. So this is not just something that Jesus popped out there. It's based on something that Jesus knew and that they had already been taught in the Psalms. It's just the folks had forgotten about it. Psalm 17:15. As for me, I will behold your face in righteousness. I shall be satisfied when I awaken with your likeness. In other words, we don't wallow in our sins. That doesn't mean we forget our sins, but we don't wallow in them. But we focus on Christ. We focus on God's grace and God's love. And in doing so, we find release. We find satisfaction. Those who long for what is truly right and who long for right to be done in general are reflecting God's wishes. You know, the New Testament later says it is not God's will that any man, as in mankind, that anyone should perish, but that all should be saved. God's desire, God's wish for us, for you, for me, for everybody on the face of this earth, God's wish, God's desire is that they find redemption and salvation and satisfaction in God. The only way to truly do that is to seek after God and to listen to God and to try and work together with God and with others. When we long for what is truly right, to do that and for that to be in our lives, and for right to be done out there too, in other people's lives, then we're after what God wants. Now, could God make the whole world do that? Well, if God really wanted to, yes. But is that really love? To force it, is that really love? No. Love is something that's chosen, and love is something that's answered. Love risks. And God risks us not hungering and thirsting and following after Him closely in order that when we do, the love that God has for us is simply multiplied. Well, not simply, but greatly multiplied in us and for us and those around us. That's God's desire and God's will. But we have a part in it. Jesus is talking to folks that had been taught, if you're born a son of Abraham, as long as you do the sacrifice, as long as you're circumcised on the eighth day and you do the sacrifices, you're okay. You don't have to do anything else. You're okay. And Jesus says, no, that's not it. You're not born into it. It's something that you have to desire and work along with God. God gives you the grace freely, but it's not free because it costs God in Jesus. It's not free because we're not free to do whatever we want to once we accept it. It costs you and me. It's freely given, but it costs you and me desiring righteousness, doing what is right. It costs us effort. Many want to be a part of righteousness, but only on their terms, but not give the whole self to it. That deep satisfaction only comes to those who deeply, earnestly desire to live righteousness. To live righteousness may be different than living righteously. We can do things that make people think we are living righteously, keeping the law, doing the commandments, or not doing. doing the sacrifices, but if it's not something that comes from deep within us, if it's not a desire, a hunger and a thirst to connect with God in such a way that we do it not just on the surface, but from the heart, from the depths of our being. If it's not from there, we can live righteously, but not really be righteous. And what Jesus is calling is for those who have that deep inner hunger, that deep inner thirst, that deep inner longing to live righteousness, to live true goodness, to live complete goodness. Because we and God together bring it forth from deep inside. It's not just loving God with the heart, it's loving God with the mind, it's loving God with the spirit, it's loving God with all of our being. That's the tough part. There are days, I mean, we laugh, and I laugh when I say it a lot of times, but there are days when I would just as soon pull the covers back over my head and say, "Good Lord, it's morning," instead of "Good morning, Lord." There are those days where you just don't feel like getting up and going out and putting on a happy face. Right? Well, maybe none of y'all experience that. But there are those times you just don't want, people just don't want to do it. There are times I don't want to do it. And the times that I miss out on something, because that's how I live that day. But there are also times when I might feel that way and I dread the day and I keep dreading the day, and all of a sudden something happens, somebody says something, or I witness something, and the next thing I know, you're just flushed and you say, you know, Peter's great line on the Mount of Transfiguration, you know, "Lord, it's a good thing we're here. If we hadn't been here, we would have missed all this." All of a sudden that happens, and it's a good day. Didn't start out that way, but it's a good day. And that's when the hunger and the thirst can truly be satisfied. But it takes work. It takes work. For our hunger, for our physical hunger and thirst to be satisfied, we have to do something, right? We have to sit down. We have to eat. We can't just sit there and stare at the plate and say, "Okay, I'm satisfied. I'm going to get up and leave now." There are times when you can tell that I don't do that, because I start getting a little more poochy. I can sit here and look at that cup of coffee, even though it doesn't have any caffeine in it. But I can sit there and look at that cup of coffee and say, "Boy, I sure would like to have that. I sure am thirsty, but am I satisfied by just looking at it?" I only get satisfied and I only get filled when I do something, when I make the effort. And that's what righteousness is about as well. It's not just living righteously, it's living righteousness, which is a part of who we are and a part of what God desires. And something that, quite frankly, just like every day, anybody in any 12-step program has to wake up that day and decide that day, okay, today I'm not going to do such and such, whether it's drugs or alcohol or whatever, I'm not going to do. Just like that, we, if we truly hunger and thirst for righteousness, have to wake up every day and find the time early in the day to say, "Today, I'm going to seek righteousness and seek to do what's right." Not, "Today, I'm going to seek not to do anything wrong." Because whenever I do that, I do far too many things wrong. But rather, "Today, I'm going to get satisfied in my hunger and my thirst because I'm going to do what's right." Anybody have anything you'd like to add?
No, it's kind of like the word "satisfied" is waiting time. You know, one time years ago, I was saved and satisfied. I kind of lived on, I thought I lived on both sides of the fence. I could still do things with my old friends, you know, to a certain extent. And come to church Sunday. I went to church Sunday morning. But I didn't read my Bible. I thought I got enough of that on preaching and everything. Yeah. I was saved and satisfied.
Saved and satisfied. That's a good way.
And thirsty for that righteousness you're talking about. You get hungry and thirsty for that righteousness if you open that Bible and read it.
I agree with you. And if you get hungry and thirsty for righteousness, you'll do. You'll open the Bible, you'll read it, you'll seek to talk to God more often and talk to others about the Bible and faith and other things more often. But I think you're right. There are a lot of folks that are, as you say, you initially were saved and satisfied. Satisfied with just being saved, and that's all. But, although, you know, Jesus does say there in Matthew chapter 7, not everybody who says, Lord, Lord, in other words, not everybody who says, saved, saved, is going to get in, but only those who do the will of my Father in heaven. So it's more than just being saved and satisfied and sitting back and saying, okay, bring it on, or I got my ticket to ride. Beatles. It's about saying, okay, this has been given to me. God has given me this redemption. God is giving me this salvation. But with that, God is expecting me to do something. Not to earn it, because we can't. But God's expecting me to do something because I have received this, so that others can know they can receive it too. And that's where it comes to living righteousness. But yeah, that's a good way to put it, William. Thank you. Anyone else? Okay. Well, if not, go and live righteousness one day at a time. And may God's grace not only come upon you, but flow through you to someone else, so that they too can find a desire for righteousness. God bless you in peace. Amen.